Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Good morning, 908 on KDXU. Thanks for tuning in today. It is Wednesday, but more importantly, it is September the 11th. And, you know, I was talking with a guy the other day, and he says, you know, I think it was Jimmy, actually. He said, Jimmy Keston, he said, I just had a grandkid born. It'll be the second generation of kids that were not even alive when 9/11 happened. And I was like, wow, that's actually a little sobering, because the only source they have is for us to help keep the memory alive of what happened on 9/11. And in keeping with that vein, I want to play this. This is about a 5-minute little segment about 9/11/2001.
What the hell was that?
It sounded like a plane crash.
Hey, Beth. What is that? Something, somebody hit the World Trade Center or the...
It's a trade center. The
World Trade Center.
I just heard a loud boom. You did? Was it a plane? That's what I was thinking. It was a terrorist attack.
Bomb just went off in the World Trade Center. It's like... It's unbelievable.
This just in, you were looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center. CNN Center right now is just beginning.
Another plane. There's another one. I'm taking a look.
Oh my God! Oh my God!
My own eye. It must be a plane.
Oh my God! Another plane just went in. Another tower.
But we're looking at live pictures of the Pentagon where there is billowing smoke. Jim Mikliszewski just reported that he heard an explosion. And right now we're looking at an aerial view of the Pentagon.
Get to the base of the World Trade Center. You can see the firemen assembled here, the police officers, FBI agents, and you can see the two towers
A huge explosion now, raining debris on all of us. We better get out of the way.
Where are we going?
I don't know. We just got to get out.
Within about 100 minutes is all it took. Within about 100 minutes, both towers went from nothing wrong with them to down on the ground. Sad, sad memories. Again, those of us that were alive and remember like it was yesterday, it was real. It happened. And nearly 3,000 souls lost their lives on that day. I just feel a tremendous responsibility to explain to my children, my two daughters were not even born yet, what happened and what it meant to America and what it meant to be an American on that day. And they didn't attack just people and they didn't kill just people, but they attacked the American way of life. And I don't know about you, but I took it personally. So we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show, but I do want to bring on my guest today, Steve Dunham from the Washington County School District. Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Andy?
Good. You said your oldest was only 1 year old?
Yeah, barely. Not quite a year. Not quite a year. Just under a year. And it's so vivid, the memory of my wife. I was in the shower. She's like, a plane just hit this World Trade Center. I'm like, no,
no. Yeah, that was my reaction to
it. Yeah, it was just disbelief. And then when I came out and saw it, and then the second one, and you're just like, holy crap, what is going on
what
here?
What is going on? Yeah, that was exactly. I think most of us felt those same emotions. Like, what is going on? You know, what is next? What's going to happen? Of course, the Pentagon not too long after that. And then
the heroes in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, heroes in Shanksville, Pennsylvania area. Let's roll, right?
That's right.
The very, very sobering, and I feel, like I said, a tremendous responsibility, Steve. And you know, you're involved in the educating of young people with the Washington County School District, and I hope that, you know, and I think they are, but I hope that these kids are all, today especially, getting a big understanding of what happened.
I think they definitely are. Yeah. I really do. You know, and even from the community, there's so many flags out today. I noticed that first thing on my walk this morning, the flags going up in the neighborhood. So I think that education is taking place. I think people are remembering. They are talking about and continuing that.
One update. There was a story on the news yesterday about the fact that there are still, it's been 23 years now, there are still people who are getting cancer, who are dying, who were there, with, you know, the dust and all the particulates that were in the air that day. And it's still affecting people, even to this date. And, you know, the images of the people covered in, you want to call it soot, but it wasn't just soot. It was dust and
everything.
Everything.
Yeah. Everything. It was just these two giant buildings pancaked, releasing the cloud of everything. Yeah. Oh, what a mess.
Yeah. So, let's never forget. Let's never forget. All right, Steve, welcome to the show. I appreciate you coming in today. I was telling you before we started, we had a pretty lively discussion on cell phones and their use in classrooms.
Oh, yes.
Whether or not they should even be allowed in classrooms or in schools. And there are, I think it's 5 states now that have completely banned cell phones in schools. Utah is not one of those yet.
Yes.
Although it's on the table. And Jack and I talked a little bit about the fact that, first of all, you got to be careful. When you start legislating things like that and making laws, you run the risk of government over regulation and of taking basically the people that are experts on a topic, taking it right out of their hands. And
yes.
So, you know, that was the first thing we talked about was, do we need a law? But how does a law versus a school district policy or rule, How do those fit? If a law comes your way, you guys have no choice, right? It's out of your hands.
Yeah, we have to follow the law, and we will follow the law because we have to set the example of a government entity that is going to abide by the laws that are created for us. And so we have to follow that.
So if there's no law, then what? How is the policy decided? Is that the school board?
That would be the school board. And so you have everybody here in Washington County has their elected representative that sits on the school board that represents them. And they are supposed to collectively consider what do my constituents want me to do for the children here in our community. And they're supposed to sit and discuss and essentially decide policy based upon that.
So, and it's interesting you bring that up because I don't think a lot of people realize how important that political process is in electing someone. We have school board elections. A lot of people, school board, whatever, you know, they roll their eyes and I'll vote for him. He seems like a nice guy, whatever. Or she seems like a nice person. But when it comes to things like what books are allowed in the library
exactly.
or what electronic devices are allowed in the schools, turns out those votes on who you elect to the school board are pretty important.
Very important. They're your representative who you can turn to when you have a concern about the books, about what is happening in schools, about everything dealing with the education of your children. They are your chosen representative that sits for their term and discusses how we will move forward with the process of educating the children here in our community.
Yeah.
And so it's a very important choice.
Let's get to the nuts and bolts of it. What is right now the Washington County School District policy on cell phones?
We do not have a policy on cell phones. So right now, I can tell you what our understanding is. Our understanding is that the legislature is looking at putting in place reinforcing laws so that we, as a school district, a local education authority, they call us LEAs, local education authority, school district, has the power to choose to enact or choose not to enact. They want to leave this as a local control issue, is our understanding at this point. So we don't believe they're moving forward with a statewide ban. That could change because, like you've mentioned, in some states they have done that. But right now they want to keep that as a local control. And I think they're seeing that from the lens of what other school districts up north have done. You have the example I'm most familiar with is Granite School District that has tried this initially in a couple of schools. And they did it more based upon age level of the children. And so they did it in a junior high and it was very successful.
And what was it they did?
They banned
just
school
a complete ban.
Banned cell phones in the school. Yes, okay. And they did that with support of the parents, because without the support of the parents, you can't make that a reality. Parents have to be able to support you and be willing to support you as you're moving forward with something like this, because parents have differing views.
Boy, do they!
Yeah, boy, do they! Boy, howdy! but I do know also that our school board has looked at all aspects of this. They have gone to national trainings and they have visited trainings specific to eliminating cell phone use in schools, and they have visited trainings on how to enhance or augment cell phone use in schools, because they don't want to turn away if it can be used as a tool to help the learning process for the children and used for good. The flip side is they recognize that there are some challenges. And those challenges do come up sometimes at the older grade levels, you know, and or maybe I should say in the middle grade levels, when there's kids really don't know how to use them for what they think they should, and they're on social media and it just kind of becomes bullying and those type of things.
Yeah.
So they have looked at both aspects so that they can be well educated from every perspective, and then they can sit down with our parents and say, hey, if we consider something like this, would you be supportive? Why or why not? Let's move forward. Let's have a discussion. Let's talk about this.
So with no district policy in place yet on cell phones, does that mean that each principal can set their own policy, or even each school teacher in a classroom?
Yes, right now I believe it is set up that every school can establish what their policy is. And in most cases, the principals are leaving it up to their teachers to choose how they would like to proceed with their classroom. Some teachers use it. They might use the Kahoot game, which is a common one that I know I have that app on my cell phone because we use it sometimes at the district for learning. And you, it's a quick way to do a quiz, to have fun with the quiz, just have some fun. So teachers may want to use that. Some teachers may not, and they might have the little pocket sleeves on the wall as you walk in the door. And you, you put your cell phone in there, and it rests there for the class period. And you know, then there's the challenges, the kids bringing the dummy cell phone and putting their dummy cell phone in there. And
I'm going to put my old 7 in there and bring my 16 with me.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, that's really how it is right now. Is it's principals deciding what is best for their school, and that has been allowing teachers to decide. Do you want to use cell phones in your class? Do you not? Most teachers have more of a softer rule of, hey, listen, you can have your cell phone with you. Don't bring it out during class time.
Okay, say I'm a teacher and I want to. I don't want kids on the phone. I've not embraced using the phone for tests and stuff like that. And so I have, you know, maybe one of those pouches or whatever.
Yeah.
What happens if I have a parent who says, you can't take my kid's phone away. I want my kid to have it on their person at all times.
Well, they can't. We can't do that with kids. The teacher kind of rules that classroom. And if a parent wants to remove their child from that class, they have that right to do that. Mm. But we'll support the teacher in that instance. We've had parents say, you can't take my child's cell phone away. Otherwise, I will claim that you damaged the phone and you'll have to replace the phone. Well, no, that's not going to work either, because then we'd have kids come in and go, oh, yeah, I need a new 16 or whatever the latest version is all the time because you took my phone away and this scratch happened. No, that's not going to happen either. We're not going to do that. We're not going to be baited into replacing your child's cell phone. Really, we do have to enforce it, and it does come down to learning. You know, the biggest joke among educators is we hear, the national news media, not so much in our community, but the national news media is, they're indoctrinating our children. And we're like, if we were indoctrinating your children, we'd do it to quit using their cell phones. Because really, that's the biggest problem we face.
There was a study done. Kim Komando had this on her Consumer Tech Update yesterday or day before yesterday. She said there was a study done in several of the areas around the United States that have banned cell phones, and they found not the kids were more anxious, but actually the kids were less anxious. They were more open to learning.
They're more social.
Each other. And they said what all the doomsayers were saying about losing their cell phone actually didn't come true. It was the exact opposite. Shouldn't that, Steve, then maybe motivate us to put a ban in?
It should. However, parents, you know, we're a strong state with parental rights.
Yeah.
And so we have to consider the parental aspect of this and work with our parents to say, will you support us in this? We would like to. We have evidence that supports this, but we need your support from your side as well. You know, I don't know if you've ever had this handy, but I have taken my daughter's cell phone away, and there is almost fear when I take it away. Not because she's doing something wrong, but for her to be detached from something she has such a connection to really creates almost a panic. And at that point, I recognize that, this has an unhealthy connection to her, and we need to have more times like this. I haven't found a good solution for that, so I'm not saying I have the solution, but I have seen the glimpse of that and recognized, that's a problem. That's not good. What can I do?
Yeah,
if you have any suggestions, call in, and I would love them.
673-5890 is the phone number. You can always text me 467-5843 or 52485. Let me try again. 467-5842. You think I would know that number by now?
867-5309.
No, now you're going to confuse everybody.
Okay, sorry.
They're going to think they're calling Jenny or something. No. 467-5842 is my text line. If you want to text in to the program, if you don't maybe want to be on the air. Now, what about the argument that some parents and even kids are making that having my cell phone with me at all times is a safety feature?
It's not. It actually becomes a bigger detriment to their safety. And I'll give you, I'll give you an example why. Okay. When we go into a lockdown situation because there's somebody in the building and kids start texting and parents start texting back, that gives off noise.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah.
And even if they're on silent, you hear a vibration. And we want children to be absolutely silent in a classroom where that room is locked and the lights are off. Because if there is a nefarious person, a bad person with a gun on the other side of that door, and they hear something in that classroom, they're going to continue to try to get in and harm those kids. Mm. We don't want kids on their cell phones in those times. That becomes a huge detriment to their safety. Parents think, oh, I need to talk to them. No, you do not. You need to stay quiet. You need to stay away from the building and let law enforcement come and deal with the problem.
It's actually for you, parents, if and not them. And that is not a good reason.
Yeah,
right?
It is not a good reason. Yeah. And I've done several videos. I've been through the drills with the officers. It's the biggest challenge we face, keeping them quiet. Because if that bad person hears the cell phone go off, hears somebody talking, hears a buzz, they'll try and get in and harm your children. Mm. Please consider that.
All right, the lady that wrote the article in for the Deseret News talks about another reason for students to have a cell phone. They call it support. When they're having anxiety or a breakdown, a parent can be there to know how to encourage and counsel privately and quickly. I don't know what to do. I'm so stressed. I'm about to throw up. Can you please check me out? I hate life. Kids need their primary backup team. Don't sever their connection with parents during school hours. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are similar to when you bring your child to the first day of school. Mm-hmm. Your little kindergartner, you drop them off, and boy, those kiddos sometimes have a hard time, mm-hmm. but it's really the parents that are having the hard time. Mm-hmm. And within a few minutes, those kiddos are fine because our teachers are trained how to work with the kids, how to make it exciting, make it fun, and make it work. And yet, the parents are the ones that struggle cutting that connection, and they always want that connection. And so when you come back to this, we have implemented counselors in schools, wellness rooms in schools, things that can help children de-escalate, that can help them learn how to self-regulate, have learned how to just calm down and get back to class. We have the tools necessary. Mm. Trust us to use them, and don't be that crutch. Children need to go through hard things sometimes, and sometimes children need to figure out how to solve the problem. We can't solve every problem for them. If we do, then we have a generation of children that don't know how to solve their own problems, and that becomes a real challenge.
The old analogy about a chicken hatching an egg. If you break the egg for the chicken, yes, it ends up dying.
Exactly,
because you
did
it for them.
They don't become strong enough, and yeah, we call it resiliency. And we need to build resiliency in children. And that's some of the things we try to do. We try to build children that can solve their problems. And we have so many parents that act as helicopter parents way too much. Yeah. Way too much. Yeah. They do not need to be picked up every time. What they need sometimes, and I say sometimes because I recognize there are cases that are different, but sometimes they just need to be, I'm busy, I can't talk today, I'll pick you up after school.
Hmm. Well, that's a tough text to send.
But sometimes yeah, that's what some children need.
No,
some,
true.
And I say, recognizing that some children do have conditions that may warrant a parent to step in a little bit more.
Sure. Kind of popped into my head. So those that are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints know about missions and know what that entails. And for those that aren't members, let me explain to you. For boys, and this was when you and I went, at the age of 19, your parents take you, if you live in Utah or near Utah, they take you to the MTC. They drop you off. When I went, they actually had a little meeting with the parents at the beginning, and then the missionary would go out one door and the parents would go out the other door. It was an incredibly traumatic experience, especially, maybe not even especially, maybe only for the parents. See, the missionary, the one going on the mission, has this world of possibilities in front of them. This you're eager, you're excited, there is so much ahead of you. You know, maybe you're going to a foreign country, or maybe you're going to another part of this country that you've never been to. You're going to have 2.5 to 2 months worth of learning a language, or learning, you know, more about your religion. You're incredibly excited. Yes, you're sad. You're not going to see your family for a couple of years, but you're incredibly excited. The family, though, all they get is, wow, I just left my son or daughter for a couple of years, and it's hard on them. That popped into my head as you were talking about the anxiety, the mm-hmm. separation anxiety of parents. And I think it's the same way with kids in school.
Yes.
What they're about to embark on is, you know, I'm talking a kindergartner, but any age, but embark on is this new world that they've never been exposed to, that you know, they're going to see friends, they're going to learn, they're going to grow. And all the parents can see is, oh, my baby, you know, that's only been my baby. Nobody else's baby for 5 years now is going to be exposed to the world.
That's right.
It's tough.
It really is tough. And yet it's really good for children mm-hmm. to be able to figure out solutions to some of those challenges. Sometimes they do need our guidance. Sometimes they do need our support.
Yeah.
But sometimes they do need to figure that out on their own.
He's Steve Dunham. We'll take a break, weather break. When we come back, more with Steve on cell phones. Should they be banned in school? Should your kids always be allowed to have them? I have a relative of mine that says, you'll have to pry them from my dead kids' hands. I don't think she said it that way, but before you take my kids' phones away. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
All right, we're talking about cell phones in schools. They are not banned in Utah right now, and we don't know if they ever will be banned completely.
No.
In the state of Utah.
You know, I think it's more on a school by school. The districts decide, working with parents. That's how what's currently happening, and it's working successfully when they approach it from that perspective of a partnership with the parents and illustrating how we can make things better.
I remember one incident when one of my kids was in elementary school. It had rained, and it doesn't rain here very often. It had rained, and he had slipped and fallen and gotten his pants all muddy.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking 90s here. This was 24 years ago or whatever. They were able to then go to the office, make the phone call to my wife at her work. She was able to then go to the school with a clean pair of pants, and she took some pictures first, by the way, and we still have those, and then get my son a clean pair of pants, and then she was able to get back to school. Everybody that talks about, you know, things, the reason you need a cell phone is for things like that. I would say, you know what, we didn't have cell phones back then, and the problem got taken care of in a pretty timely fashion. I mean, we didn't need them.
And even now, we can actually take care of that faster because all of our schools have access to the counselor closet, where they have a quick change for accidents just like that or other accidents, and the child needs a new pair of underwear, a new pair of pants. Most schools in our district have those either on hand, or they can call us at the district and still call the parents. Either way. But we've encouraged the schools to have a change on hand for exactly that type of thing.
One of the reasons that they write in this article why students should have cell phones. Minor emergencies happen every day. Accidents, forgotten homework, no lunch, money, lost permission slip, etc. So your kids should have a phone because they didn't bring their homework.
Oh, boy. Mm. you know, there's a lot could be said, and I'm not going to say any of it.
Okay. way to dodge the bullet there, Steve. I will say this. And Steve actually said it the other day. You forgot your homework. That's your problem, kid. You know, it doesn't have to be mom.
They can still step into the office, though, in between classes before school.
Yeah, that's true.
And make a quick call.
Yeah.
We have access to phones. We're not like... we're not the Stone Age when you go into school, you know?
Okay, let's go the other way with this for just a second. What about the use of phones in schools for schoolwork? You mentioned one program, I forget.
Kahoot.
Kahoot, is that what it's called?
Kahoot.
And I know computers became important in schools a couple of decades ago where you're taking tests on computers and things like that. So they do have a logistical use, right?
They can have. I wouldn't say they do. I would say they can have a logistical use, and they can have a positive use. However, in those instances, you really want to leave it up to the educator to choose if they want to use them in that fashion and how they want to use them. Because if the teacher has the buy-in, has the training, they've been to the professional development and seen, oh, if I use cell phones like this, I can engage all my class at this percentage. It's a higher engagement level. When they have a higher engagement level, they perform better because they retain the information better. That's dependent teacher by teacher on how they want to teach. We don't tell teachers how they have to teach. We say, here's the curriculum. We need the child to learn these elements, and we need them at this proficiency level by this time period. How you do that is up to you. And giving a teacher that flexibility empowers them a lot to do things they're passionate about. They're excited to help children find ways to learn. So back to cell phones, they can have a positive influence in that, but not necessarily they do.
Have you seen, Steve, as an educator, as a school district, kids starting school, we're talking kindergartners, so five-year-olds, six-year-olds, that are already addicted to electronic media?
Yeah. See how I didn't let you finish? Yes.
Yeah, that bad, huh?
Yes, it is bad. There's a lot of kids that, and it's hard. I get it as a parent. You know, they go home and they're raised by a screen. That happens. That's the reality of life, is that happens. Just like the reality of life is that there are children that go home to an abusive situation in their family. Just like there are children that go to what they call home, but it isn't their home. They might be living with somebody. They're essentially homeless. We have those realities here in our community.
The exception, though, is this would be more common, right? The addiction to screens?
It is getting more and more.
Would you say more are than aren't when they start kindergarten?
Oh, goodness, I don't know. I can't answer that. Especially at kindergarten. At the younger age, it's harder to say. I think when you get into fourth or fifth grade, it's easier to say, yes, more are addicted. Mm. At kindergarten, I don't know, Andy. I truly can't answer that.
Is it worse than when we were kids and we were addicted to cartoons, or we were addicted to watching Gilligan's Island, or watching TV or whatever?
Yeah, because when we were kids, and again, this is my perspective, we would go out and play knowing, I want to be home to watch this. But that's sometimes true. We were home late, we missed it, and it was like, I missed that. Oh, well.
Yeah, I can't.
Because we were out playing, yeah, and it wasn't on demand for us whenever we wanted. Yeah. So there wasn't that sense of, I can watch this whenever I want. I can do what I want, you know. It was, I missed it. Okay, I'm going to go out and play with my friends again, or ride bikes, or jump that curb.
Good point. And when the street lights came on, it was time to go home.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Ah, those were the days. Okay, now, at what age would you say that the cell phone in particular, and I'm not talking about iPads or watching movies or whatever kids do when they're really young, but the cell phone itself starts to become a real factor. You mentioned fourth and fifth graders. I think there's got to be every high school kid now. Every high school kid has a smartphone, right? Pretty much.
I mean, yeah. I've seen a couple that don't because of parental choices, and I'm okay with that. I don't know. It definitely gets younger and younger and younger each year as they become more common.
My daughter, so I had one daughter who was in high school a few years back, and it was so iPhones were at like generation 9 or something like that. She had a 7. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, Steve, there was a little bit of, I'm not going to call it bullying because I don't think she was bullied, but there was a little bit of persecution, a little bit of looking down your nose because my daughter had a 2-year-old phone and everybody else had the latest, greatest.
That's very true. And I think it's more true for children than it is for adults, because children, they will tease when they have an old phone. I still have, up until 2014, I had an iPhone 1.
And really?
Mine is still functioning.
All right.
And I'm very proud of that. Yeah, I'm very proud of that. And so, you know, it didn't affect me, but I know my kids always felt that pressure of, all my friends have this. Or I need to get an Apple because my friends have an Apple, and then we can talk this way.
Yeah.
You know, and I, it was always that damn Apple. Sorry.
Speaking of Apple, they had a big event yesterday introducing the iPhone 16 and 16 Pro. And, you know, for $1,000, you can get yourself a new 16 Pro or whatever. But,
you know, the flip.
This is a 12 right here. You probably have something similar now, maybe a 10 or a 12 or somewhere in there. And I think there's this race to get the latest, greatest phone.
Yeah.
And like you said, especially for kids, this works fine. Mine's, 4 years old now? It works fine.
But the challenge is we're building a generation of children that are living off of this prestige of having something newer or fancier, and then judging others based upon what you have or what they don't have.
Yeah.
And that's not good. That's not healthy for anybody. It really isn't.
it was, you know, maybe the clothes you wore when we were in high school. And I'm sure it's still partially that as well. But now it's what kind of car do you drive and what kind of cell phone do you have?
Yeah, I guess. It's the truth. It really is the truth. You know, one of the big challenges we're seeing, Andy, and this is a big negative to cell phones, especially with the middle group of children, you know, from sixth to ninth grade, I would say, and into high school, up higher into high school, is using artificial intelligence to bully, to
really
make up fake photos. And
we're talking about obscene photos.
Obscene photos, we are. It's a big trend in schools nationally where a kid will take a picture of a girl, her face will get removed, and it will be put on a different body without any clothes. And that is very, very common. And then it gets shared throughout a community, shared throughout a school, and it is a big problem in some communities.
Wow.
And we're seeing a little of that here, not a lot, but a little of that. And I think parents need to be aware of, you need to teach your children proper use of the technology they have in their hand. Otherwise, they're not ready for it. They shouldn't have it.
Yeah. All right, I got to get a commercial break in. Okay. Steve Dunham, Washington County School District, is with me. If you want to call 673-5890, or you can text me at 467-5842.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, good morning, 950 on KDXU again. Never forget, I've got a little segment I'm going to play here in about 7 or 8 minutes about heroes and 9/11. But right now, I've got Steve Dunham with me. And Steve, you know, you and I might talk about Facebook, right, and getting likes and stuff on Facebook. But the kids aren't really using Facebook. They're using what they call IG or Insta or
Snapchat.
Or some of the TikTok, of course.
Yeah, TikTok is big.
But let's talk about the like and share functions in these social media apps. You know, when I first got Facebook, I would go through and I would click, oh, that's interesting, but I don't really do that much anymore. I just kind of scroll through and read. But it's kind of a thing with kids, right? They like to get that kind of, what'd you call it, a dopamine hit?
Yes, that's exactly it. Children get what seems to be a dopamine hit from the likes they get on social media or the views or whatever, and they get this rush from that. Well, we all know that dopamine in our brain can become addictive, and you can get very attached or drawn to whatever's causing that for you, whether it's, you know, for some people it's adrenaline junkies, for some people it might be pornography, for some people it might be social media. Mm. And so you have these kids with their underdeveloped brains that they're on social media, which is the biggest misnomer, because they post something, they get a bunch of likes, and they think, oh, I'm popular, I'm liked.
Yeah.
Not recognizing that they have friends that are trying to communicate with them that they're ignoring to get those likes. And then they have a rush of a series of posts or tweets or whatever. I don't think they call them tweets anymore, but or whatever, where they get no likes or one or two, and they get so depressed.
Yeah, nobody likes me.
But they don't recognize their friends are still out there. Social media has destroyed the word social.
Yeah, it's anti-social media.
It is anti-social media. It is exactly that. Mm. And there's so many more benefits to a child not being on social media, not getting connected to the views, or being led down a path of what do I do to get more views?
Have you heard of this new one out there? It's called Real or Be Real.
Yes.
And my daughter's too. Yeah, she was, and my daughter, she's not a high school. She's 22 years old. She's a returned missionary, but she's dating a guy, and they both got this Real or Be Real or whatever it is. And I guess at random times, I'm like, how random could it be? She's like, no, really, it's random times. It gives you a notification that says it's time to be real. And it has you take a picture of you, kind of a selfie, and then from the front camera of whatever you're doing or seeing at the time. And then you can write a little comment about what it was you were up to at that moment. And I was like, wait, what? She says, yeah, no matter what you're doing, no matter where you are, it'll randomly say, let's be real. And you have to take these pictures and then explain them. And I said, well, can you tell it no? She goes, well, you can tell it no, but why would you? And I'm like,
you're being real, Dad.
I'm sitting on the toilet. I don't want a picture. You know, yeah. I don't know. I don't get it. And I guess it, she says it actually keeps a record of when you do say no, it keeps a record of what you posted and who you posted to, and they can see. It's crazy. It's another one of those, I guess, dopamine rushes. So.
But look how it's connected with a very generational audience, because you and I would be like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
you know? And yet to an audience, they're like, well, why would you say no? Well, why not be real? Come on, be real. You know, and I'm like, I'm as real as they get by saying no.
I was going to say, be real, throw the phone away and actually talk to somebody. Yeah, that's real.
I've actually ended up in the selfie version of those because I've been with my daughter. And she's like, oh, it's time for my be real. Here, smile. And I'm like, what? And she gets me in a funny grin because I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, or I've smiled a time or two. But yeah,
same here. Now, my daughter is in Spain studying abroad, so actually some of her B-reels are pretty fascinating at this point, and she'll send me some pictures. But
well, there you go.
But I did not get the app. She's like, you should get this, Dad, and then you can be real all the time with us, too. And I'm like, I'm not doing that.
You know, and you hit a key thing there, too. I think when you have a child studying away and you want to have a connection, yeah, that might be fun to see. Oh, look at what you just saw today. I have never seen something like that. Tell me about it, you know? Where for us, we're still in St. George. Yeah, you know, I'm still in St. George.
It's hazy today. You want to see that?
Horribly hazy. It's the zombie apocalypse sun this morning.
Yeah. So, all right, let's kind of put a bow on this whole cell phones in schools thing. In your opinion, will a law be passed that will ban cell phones in Utah? And if not, what will happen policy-wise?
No, a law, in my opinion, it will not be passed banning cell phones in Utah. From what we have heard, laws are being passed to reinforce and support us so that we can establish policy and work with parents to decide what is best for our school district. That's our understanding. Sometimes my opinion, as I've talked about cell phone use, I feel like there's more negatives than there are positives towards cell phone use in school. So that comes out, yet I could be swayed either way. I'm still open to the idea that there are some teachers that go through professional development and see ways to use them and are very proactive and are very really out there and trying to engage children on any level they can. And I'm supportive of that.
Okay, I had one meme I read. I thought it was pretty apropos. A teacher says, "Yeah, you think we don't know when you have your cell phone?" He says, "Nobody looks down at their crotch and smiles on a regular basis, so we know you have them."
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Well, Steve, thank you for coming in today.
It's a pleasure.
You know, it's a fascinating topic, and it's a topic that not only is current and hot right now, but it's not going away. It's going to be controversial for years.
It is going to come up again, and like you said, it is going to get hot or more hot as it is as we progress, I think. And hopefully parents will recognize, please look at some of the negative impacts before you get too heated about it. Look at some of the negative impacts of cell phone. It can be addictive. It can be have that negative impact on your child. They feel like a connection that it really isn't there.
I think something to remember, too, is 99% of the time you are paying for your kid's cell phone. You have rights as a parent to say, I need to see what you're looking at. I need to see what apps are on your phone. I'm paying for this. If you want to go out and buy your own phone, well, I guess that's your own prerogative, right? But as long as I'm paying for it, I need to know.
So. And there are some phones that where you can actually turn them off, too, at night.
Yeah. All right, Steve, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Been a pleasure talking with you today. I want to end the show today on a little tribute to heroes, in particular, of course, the heroes from 9/11. But I just feel like we need to remember and, well, never forget.
Every person is faced with a moment in their life where they have to choose to run from adversity or stand in its path and face it head on. That question could not be more clear than 9/11, when our first responders were met with an impossible choice, to run into burning buildings when everyone else was running away. And yet for them, it wasn't a choice. That moment came, and without question, without a moment's hesitation, they ran toward the fire, toward the danger, toward sacrifice, 2,977 lives were taken that day, 413 of which were first responders. 343 were firefighters. We honor you. 60 were police officers. We honor you. 8 were emergency medical technicians. We honor you. And the rest, 2,564, were mothers, fathers, daughters, sons, brothers, and sisters. In a day of tragedy, we saw more clear than ever what it means to be a hero. And we will never forget. God bless their sacrifice. And God bless America.